I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. Having a great conversation, sort of a deep dive into the political psyche and development of a progressive wing within the Democratic Party, outlined in the book The Rebels by Joshua Green. So Joshua, I want to get into, we talked about the emergence of Warren, the rise of the backbencher, Bernie Sanders, and then the new generation now has come to the table, not only in a different fashion than we typically see in Washington, but with a higher degree of demands and a willingness to use the outside infrastructure, social media, et cetera, to press their points. And that was never more noted than in the person of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from New York. Tell us a little bit about that story and the emergence of her role in this new American politics.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the fascinating thing, or the most historically noteworthy thing about AOC is that she represents a kind of generational passing of the torch, right? We've talked about this emergence of left-wing populism after the crisis, but it's two kind of chief avatars were Warren and Bernie, who were much, much older. Ocasio-Cortez is so interesting because she was really brought into national politics by Bernie Sanders. She was a Bernie Sanders campaign staffer, volunteer, got very interested in organizing that way. That's what prompted her to run for office. It helped that she also turned out to be, I think, a generationally talented politician and communicator. But she sort of burst onto the scene by defeating Joe Crowley, the New York congressman, who everybody in Washington expected to be the next Democratic Speaker of the House, the successor to Nancy Pelosi. And the idea that this young Latina woman and her band of Justice Democrat, Social Democrat organizers had figured out how to organize and beat this guy was just blew everybody's minds. And she herself was such a dynamic figure, both in her use of social media, but also just in her radicalness and willingness to kind of challenge Democratic establishment norms. That she instantly just seized the spotlight, not just the media spotlight, but also I think because she was young, female, and Latina, the conservative media spotlight too, and just became sort of politically like the Taylor Swift of 2018. I mean, is all anybody talked about.
Right.
She began her Washington tenure even before she was sworn in by occupying Nancy Pelosi's office.
Yeah. Not one of the wisest moves she could make as a young congresswoman, right?
Maybe not. But if you want to get the attention of the nation and the national political press corps, that's a pretty good way to do it. And she definitely did. Story I tell in The Rebels of Ocasio-Cortez is sort of where she came from, how she did this, but also her political evolution in Washington from, a radical kind of activist who would occupy the speaker's office to someone who gradually learned the way that power works in Washington and in Congress and managed to very cleverly, I think, bend her skills toward things like oversight hearings and focusing her social media following on specific issues and specific campaigns, you know, in a way that's allowed her to emerge, is certainly the most prominent member of her congressional class. But really, right. I think one of the more, if not the most prominent young Democrat there is, period, since so many Democrats are over 70, over 80, and like not just a generation older, but two generations older.
Yeah, she emerged very much as this new voice for a progressive form of politics that certainly elicited a response from the right. There's no doubt about that. She became, in many respects, the updated 21st century version of Hillary Clinton. So the fixation that Republicans had on Hillary for 30 years sort of transferred, I'm sure, much to Hillary's great relief, onto AOC as she began, as you noted, to press the system in Washington in a way that caught attention, but B, ultimately taught her how to actually press it the right way, to sort of get some things done. And so she was able to sort of focus her firepower on Trump, on a lot of the things that emerged after 2015, 2016 election, in a way that I would say kind of took some of the heat off of on the Democratic side. You have the creation of the squad, the four members, the younger women in Congress who sort of banded together to sort of raise up these issues. And again, focusing the firepower on the right, on them, as opposed to more broadly Democrats. Talk about that dynamic and how it elicited a positive response inside the Democratic Party for sort of creating this message line, these through lines that actually resonated with voters that the Democrats would need.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key in on both sides of that coin is that they were young women of color, basically. And that was something, if you look at the leadership of the Democratic Party, generally it tends to be old, white, and geriatric. And what you had in AOC and the squad was this exciting, dynamic, new brand of younger legislators who, frankly, looked more like the Democratic base, which is heavily minority, does include like a lot of young people. Most young people still vote Democratic, even though we have some polls showing that they're moving to Trump. I think on the left, that was very exciting. They also stood for a kind of radical brand of politics. You know, these social Democrats didn't really have much representation in Congress before the squad came along. But that spoke very much, I think, to the political inclinations of a lot of young left-leaning people. And on the right, I think the fact that they were young people of color made them representative or targets of the kind of cultural panic that Donald Trump's version of Republicanism had kind of ginned up in the years after 2016. Republicans, Fox News, were no longer chiefly concerned with getting tax cuts for the rich, or at least that's not what they like talking about on TV and talk radio. They were interested in focusing on issues like immigration and radical socialists, all that sort of thing. And Ocasio-Cortez in particular, because she was so outspoken and such an effective and invisible communicator, I think became the target of that ire in a way that just night after night after night, if you turn into Fox News, that's what they were talking about. That's who they were talking about. And the fact also that AOC, you know, back before Twitter broke, was so willing to kind of hop online and go to war with these people, I think helped kind of generate these news cycles that made her one of the central characters.
Yeah, it so much so that by the time you get to the 2020 election, you have Biden running as a quasi-populist, recognizing, as you note in the book, you know, that this is an emerging force within his own party that he's going to need. He's going to need to know how to navigate that, as well as navigate the mainstream of America, but also deal with what has emerged on the right as this white nationalist aggressive form of of conservative populism that actually is ripping at the fabric of the country. And it surprised people that Biden would lean into the sort of Warren Sanders economic populism, given his, as you note, his more centrist corporate friendly background. How has this shaped, because it's going to be ultimately, and we'll get into this in a moment, it is going to be a narrative stream within this 2024 cycle, particularly given what the president and his team were able to accomplish on infrastructure and sort of staving off the financial collapse of the economy with the inflation bill, et cetera. How did what was the sort of the mental jujitsu that Biden had to do to actually kind of land sort of teetering a little bit in space on this sort of center left populism, but not going so far as an AOC.
It's a great question. So look, to me, the reason I wrote this book is because I think that I wanted to talk about and I wanted to capture the historical importance of these three characters, Warren, Bernie, and AOC, and how they've changed not just Democratic politics in the party, but the country over the last 15 years. To me, the clearest sign of that change, as pundits and reporters, Mike, you and I, like a lot of the game is sort of talking about who's running for president, who wins the nomination, whatever. But the way American politics really works, it's not just who wins the presidency, is how does the country change? How does the policy change? How does what the government do? Who are the winners and losers? Who's affected? Who comes out ahead? Who comes out behind? I think the real measure of influence of my three characters and of this left-wing populism in general is that if you go back to the beginning of the story in 2008, you see how the Democratic Party behaves. And let's remember who was in the White House then. Joe Biden,
right.
Who, when I came to Washington, Biden was nicknamed the Senator from Corporate America. He's from Delaware, where a lot of corporations are. He was sort of the leading pro-business, pro-corporate Democrat. So literally the antithesis of someone like Elizabeth Warren. And I have scenes in the book early on, when Warren was testifying before Congress, she'd be fighting with Biden, and Biden would be kind of, demeaning her because he's defending these credit card companies. If you flash forward to the 2020 Democratic primaries, and just after Biden was elected, you can measure the effect that my characters have had just by looking at the sea change in what Joe Biden did and what he was talking about.
Yeah.
I think Biden wisely embraced a lot of the economic populism that my three characters had espoused, while rejecting some of the more extreme, cultural left-wing stuff on defund the police, on immigration, that sort of thing. He adopted what was best about their platform, and he instituted that as president in 2020. And so instead of a very Wall Street focused bailout like we got in 2008, 2009 recovery, that wasn't really focused on the middle class, you look at what happened after the COVID crash, which was even worse and even deeper. And it's like a menu list of items that Elizabeth Warren was pushing for back in 2009, right? So multiple rounds of stimulus,
right?
Not given to Goldman Sachs, but given to people in the middle class. You had student loan freezes, eviction moratoriums, a ton of small business loans. So mom and pop businesses, you remember the PPP loans and all those acronyms, everything focused in the middle class. And lo and behold, within 2 years of that COVID crash, America had recovered all the jobs that it had lost. Unemployment today is as low as it was back in the Eisenhower administration. Stock market is at record levels. Economic sentiment has turned around, low for a while because of the high inflation that came along with it. But if you look at just the actual economic numbers, and if you look at what Biden has embraced, this idea of reshoring manufacturing and trying to build new electric vehicle factories or battery factories in the parts of America that were deindustrialized and that really gave Trump his victory in 2016, I think what you see is kind of the wholesale adoption of a lot of the economic populist ideas that Warren, Sanders, and AOC have all fought for, and also some of the environmental ones.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.